Did Black Panther cross that amazing billion-dollar threshold? Do we have lots of Infinity War picks and quotes to dissect with you? And are we all caught up in Jessica Jones? Yes! And this is Marvel Movie News.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Marvel Movie News.
Excelsior to you, our merry Marvelites. We are here with episode 171.
Wow.
That is so many episodes. Four till anniversary, and I still challenge you guys, do some anniversary covers. I want to see art.
Ooh.
Right? That'd be cool.
That'd I would love
like
that.
Variant covers and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, variant covers.
175. They have 4 weeks.
I like that. Have us as different superheroes.
Yeah, let's have like a challenge.
Yeah.
So, 175. And we are coming to you live from the local bar because Jessica Jones is frequenting many of them. We actually have a few in the show, different bars for Jessica Jones to drown the sorrows at. And we're here to tell you why you should be as excited as we are about all the news from all the studios and all things Marvel. And you can find us on iTunes at Marvel Movie News. You can find us on youtube.com/Popcorn Talk Network. You can also find us on Popcorn Talk's website, popcorntalknetwork.com. Follow us on Twitter at Marvel News PTN or at the Popcorn Talk Network. And you can find us on Facebook, which is harder and harder to use, at facebook.com/Marvel News Show. Follow us, like us, and most importantly on Twitter, where if you retweet a link whilst we are live, Aunt Manthony in the booth will retweet you.
Where's that champagne bottle? $1 billion club for Black Panther.
Yes! Yes, that's a thing. That happened.
So much money.
Yes.
So much money. A $200 bottle of Hogarth champagne, I think, is due for this crossover episode between those two things.
That and a Streetwalker party.
Oh, that show. So I am Coy Jandreau, at Coyjandreau. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. And where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Markeia McCarty. That's MarkeiaMCCarty. McCarty.
And our associate producer, Ollie Dreamboat, is out there in the world. You can find him on the internet as well. He helps us run this whole magic charade. And we're going to start, of course, with the biggest news of the biggest dollar sign, and that is Black Panther crossed $1 billion.
So, like it was nothing.
That, I mean, 26
like
days.
Nothing. Had a really strong showing in China when it opened, and that was last weekend, I believe. So in 26 days, Black Panther passed $1 billion. And that is not just a Dr. Evil villain saying, or a Cartman saying, it passed $1 billion. 26 days.
Yeah.
It is less than a month old, and it is worth over $1 billion.
Domestically alone, $521 million, making it the ninth biggest, ninth ever. Now, quantifying that, ninth, adjusting for inflation, all that's tricky, but ninth of all time, that's every single movie domestically, period, hard stop. That's if you've seen a movie, this is number nine, and I cannot stress the importance of that. That's not just superhero movies. That's not just the most recent movies. That's nine ever. It is in the top 10 of all movies, and it's still going strong. Like, this movie has not slowed down. It is still number one at the box office.
Not at all. And number two is Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
So number one, Black Panther. Number two, Wrinkle in Time. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Two movies being edited across
from each other. If you want to, you know, quantify and categorize and da-da-da-da, then this is right now the number two superhero movie of all time, behind the Avengers, and it doesn't look like it's going to stay number two. And you have to keep in mind that the Avengers was a long time in the making, starting in 2008 with Iron Man, where you had Tony Stark introduced by Robert Downey Jr., and then you had everything set up with Nick Fury, Samuel L. Jackson. You had the Thors that happened in there, and all of this other stuff to get you to the Avengers. Like, you spent time with those characters. Black Panther, for people that didn't see him in comic books before Civil War, he was Civil War, and now he's this.
Yeah.
And now it is second behind Avengers.
And that what you're right, there was a five movie lead up. There was all of this this build up, and there was, I mean, from the beginning, Avengers Initiative set it up, and there was this, it was the first of its kind to have this team up movie, and it redefined cinema, period. And
very
then
nicely.
Black Panther had Civil War in this, and he was in like 17 minutes or whatever of Black Panther, not of Civil War, and it wasn't as much of a build-up because it only had the 2 years. Like, there wasn't the ability to learn all that stuff. And this was a movie that everyone kind of, like, you know, expected to do well and to do superhero well, but not genre redefining, big, 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 big. So $1 billion for a movie is a landmark. So few make it there. And this movie is doing it for all the right reasons. And it wasn't, It's not a showboaty movie. It's a smart movie. And I really like that. Like, as much as I love Fast and Furious, I'm really glad it's a smart movie. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. And it's like, and it's not the first person out of Civil War to like happen. I mean, and I love Spider-Man Homecoming. Never get me wrong with that. I think it's the right tone, especially what we need. And I'm glad that we're going to talk about it like later, like other things that are happening with Spider-Man Homecoming. But you also have to remember, Spider-Man has like a pretty epic nerd following behind Spider-Man. And then Black Panther doesn't necessarily have that recognized of a following.
Yeah.
And then to have this happen with this, I mean, I'm glad that this nerd pump was primed.
Oh, it's perfect.
I'm going to say beginning with Blade back in 98, but perfected with Iron Man in 2008, and then so on and so forth into the mainstream to then be able to make this happen, to Black Panther happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'd argue Spider-Man is one of the big three recognition-wise. Like, you got your Batman, your Superman, your Spider-Man. Like,
yeah,
I'd
people say, know, you know that. And, you know, Batman. We're not, DC also.
They got the, I mean, that's the big three. So for Black Panther Superman to do this is showing what the movie is in itself and how it's affecting people and like what it's doing for the world. Like, I can't get over that STEM center. Like, I can't get over the fact that it's like having real life ramifications. So Black Panther made $1 billion, 521 domestic. It opened huge in China. It's opening huge in domestic, international markets, and it's not slowing down. So I'm really excited, like we've talked about almost every week, to walk into Black Panther and then walk into Infinity War. Like, I'm really excited for that glorious 9 hour or 7 hour day.
You know, depending on how that works, might be Black Panther, Infinity War, Deadpool.
Yes, good God. Yeah, I mean, who knows? We could have the best 9 hour day ever.
Yes, like, goodbye Sunday, but hello, awesomeness.
I want it. That's some magic. Live on popcorn. So it's a good time to be a nerd. It is a magical time to be a Black Panther fan. And what's interesting to me, and I just found these quotes before the show that I thought were fascinating, is obviously the movie, we've heard about a 4 hour cut. We've heard a picture locked 4 hour cut because there was sound design and a score done for a 4 hour cut, which means there's a lot of stuff that was not only finished, but it was barely taken out. So that means the scenes were like
so
right
close
on the cusp.
So close.
Two of the ones that I found the most interesting, the Rap sat down with the editor of Black Panther and he said, quote, hands down, the most painful scene to cut was one of Danai Gurira and Denae Kaluuya. Is that how I say his name? Kaluuya?
Kaluuya.
Yeah. Shiger, the editor of Black Panther, said, they said that there was a scene towards the end after things go bad where Killmonger's in control and all that. And we're talking about, what are they going to do? What is Wakanda going to become? These are two powerhouse actors and it was an incredible scene with so many layers to it. Boyfriend and girlfriend, general, her advisor, all those things that was painful to edit out. And that's funny because that was one of the things when the movie ended, I wanted one more scene with them. Like, after he drops the knife, I was like, but what about them? Like, and it's interesting that they made that they knew that this exists as is.
He was no longer part of that inner council of,
He did not show up there.
He did not have
M'Baku
a voice.
Did.
Yes, M'Baku was
this
there.
This guy did not.
Yeah,
so that's
M'Baku
very
stepped up because that spot was emptied.
The king, that's treason, hard stop. Like, that's just how it is.
It's like, you chose.
You chose revolt.
You chose right then when you were standing nearby Okoye and possible king.
Yeah.
And then you chose.
You had a full beat. It was a moment. It was a powerful moment. And you do not go against Danai Gurira.
And then you chose again.
You never go against Danai Gurira, period.
You chose again later during Civil War. You chose again.
I'm curious how much, or if he's in, what capacity he's in Infinity War. I'm curious about going forward if that's our, because that's the next time we're meeting all the Wakandans.
Because he tripled down on that choice. So let's see if that character comes back.
We know M'Baku's in Infinity War, so I'm excited to see. So yeah, that quote I thought was interesting because that's a scene that I felt like, but the movie was already, you know, a little over two. They didn't want the 4 hour cut in theaters. We want it on Blu-ray.
Yeah. And the actor, Daniel Kaluuya, is absolutely excellent.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Excellent in how he depicts Wakabi, who didn't exist. Didn't exist in the, like, he had to make him out of whole cloth, basically. He had to fabricate him. And it works.
Yeah.
It fits so seamlessly.
And I can't wait to see that scene. I'm sure we'll get that and a bunch of others on DVD. I hope we get them in the film. I'd love to see a cut that's, I like to lead scenes a bunch of the next guy, but I love extended cuts more. I like to see it in the fabric of the film. And then another sequence that was cut took place earlier in the film, but similar developed dynamics between two characters. One of the strongest bonds in the movie is the one between T'Challa and his mentor, Zuri. And a deleted scene further deepened that connection, saying, quote, there's a scene between Chadwick and Forrest, which sets up their relationship. It sort of lets you attach yourself to the father-son dynamics that later on in the film, you really feel that more. Ooh. I was also wondering about that because he had a father figure in his father, but he also had this Zuri relationship that you felt the importance of Forrest Whitaker because, one, it's Forrest Whitaker, but also he's like a priest figure. He's a mentor. He's a leader, but he's also really important to T'Challa. So I was curious about that relationship and, once again, just time constraints and all those things, but I'd love to see that relationship more deepened so that when we, spoiler alert, when things happen, we feel it ever more.
So. Indeed, because, you know, Zuri has that background of not only being out in the field as a war dog, but he's also a consultant. He's a spiritual advisor.
He's been a spy. He's been so many things.
So there's all these layers. It just goes on with Zuri. And then he's kind of possibly a replacement father figure or just like a father figure to T'Challa. Yeah. So everything that goes along with, you know, wearing that mantle for the king of a country.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's a lot.
So I'm very curious about those, and I don't think editors get enough credit. So he was saying that his job is to have the pulse of the audience. But, yeah. I mean, they do, but like people don't talk about like edited by, you know, like we talk about the director.
I understand what you're saying.
Because he said that his job is to have the pulse of the audience. So think about every time you screen that movie, you have to go like, they like this and like reshape, and you got to deal with every frame. You have to pick which take that the actor delivers, and you also have to like have the patience of a Zen master.
Yeah, which is why I adore the editor on Donnie Darko.
for instance, you definitely did a
really good vision of that.
Absolutely, and Danny Boyle, whoever Danny Boyle uses all the time, like that man's frenetic energy is captured in the editing room. So I just editors, thank you for existing. Moving on to my boy Spidey. Spider-Man, there are new details on the femme fatale character, and an updated description for Spider-Man Homecoming, the sequels hints at a Bond-type character, as referenced by the hashtag show, so thank you, hashtag show. And this is supposed to be a Bond girl-type international agent with the studio seeking a European actress in her 20s to play the role. So if Silver and Black didn't exist, that sounds like Silver Sable or Black Cat to me. Either one of those, to me, could be that character.
Yeah, I have some mixed feelings about this because I very much enjoyed Spider-Man Homecoming and how it was set in high school. So it wasn't Bond girl type coming in or like what a Bond girl type would need to exist in a story with children. Young high schoolers, with children. I like them to be teenagers. It's not that just yet.
Yeah.
In fact, that kind of feels like that kind of taints it for me a bit. I don't want a femme fatale in it. I want study room, you know,
junior
girl
year
next
high
door,
school.
Junior
like one
year
more
high
year.
School.
Like,
I wanted the Harry Potter.
I wanted the Harry Potter escalation.
Exactly.
I wanted like two, three more.
Yeah.
So I feel
just
like, I totally agree.
Don't need it just yet.
My theory? Jessica Drew. Spider-Woman is introduced.
Okay.
She stays a mentor role. She stays adult. Spider-Man stays young. Spider-Woman is the older character. And then we have, because Jessica Drew in the comics, and the best times Jessica Drew has been lately is when she's a mom. So not necessarily make her a mom, but Jessica Drew hasn't been introduced in the Marvel Universe, so maybe have her as an older figure, someone that Peter Parker gets really squirrely around.
Right.
Like, when you're a little boy and you meet a girl that's really pretty and you're 16 and she's, like, 22... That causes a certain like flustering. I'm hoping that it doesn't take us out of high school. It just gives us a few scenes where she's like this figure that disrupts his, day-to-day normal life. Because I want it to stay in high school too.
Yeah, I really, really, really want it to just stay in high school. I think you kind of have, not saying for Peter Parker's point of view, but you kind of have Aunt May for that like older woman that's just like, she's adorable.
Right.
She's adorable, but she's, you know, she's lived her life kind of a thing, or it looks like she will live her life kind of a thing. So I don't want them to interject someone that is a different note than what
totally
they've established so far. Because when you think about it, if you have somebody like that in a, some of that character type, that's that genre character type in this, like in a John Hughes type thing, then how do you also have that really great scene where Peter Parker is in the back seat of, you know,
one of the best scenes
in
Marvel.
Which was so great.
Yeah.
Because you got that awkwardness. This was, you know, prom, homecoming.
Yeah. It's your
this
almost famous homecoming. Moment. It's being a kid.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, I don't want them to grow up like this yet.
Yeah.
So that's me.
I want this movie 4 or 5 to bring in like, adult Peter Parker influences and stuff.
Yeah.
So the only way this works in my brain is the Jessica Drew angle as a two scene moment, introducing the idea of an older, you know, already established character and blah, blah, blah. But I don't want this to suddenly leap through senior year personally. So I agree.
Yeah. Too much too fast.
Yeah. And I know we've mentioned the last week or the week before that Silver and Black has been delayed inevitably. Someone in the live chat mentioned, I don't think that it's done enough for them to bring in Silver Sable Black Cat to this. I don't think that movie is as dead as to bring that in. I actually think that we'll be hearing movement on Black and Silver soon, Silver and Black soon. They just wanted to get the script right.
Yeah, and if you look at Roxanne Gay. I just want her to write for
don't
Marvel
turn on the red
and
light.
I just want her to write so badly. Gina Prince Bythewood. She was just like, hey, it's all about the script.
Yeah.
We're working on the script. So the script is important.
I don't think it's dead. So I don't think that we're going to get either of those characters in this, because then it would happen to be. So I love the idea of an older character. I just don't, like Markia said, want that to change the tone of Homecoming. That was so Homecoming. Like, it was right there in the name.
Yeah.
And it kept it special and different. And I love, we've talked about before, how Infinity War ends. And the first two movies we get are Spider-Man Homecoming, Guardians of the Galaxy. The most grounded, because he's a kid. The most cosmic, because it's Guardians. That's perfect.
Yeah, I want layers and messy hair and not too much makeup, you know, yeah. And just like kid issues. You know, we all deal with adult issues. Give this kid issues.
And let kids have their hero.
Like, yeah, let kids, them have that.
Like, when we were, I mean, when this universe started, we were 10 years younger. This generation is if you were 18 when that came out, you're 28 now. So let, like, 10-year-olds have a new hero. Like, yeah. The 10-year-olds that started with Iron Man are 20 now. So it's cool to have Spider-Man Homecoming, to have kids discover their Spider-Man. Like, when we got Tobey Maguire that first time, it's cool to see kids be like, oh, he's like me! So I think it's important to keep him there a little longer.
Yeah.
Plus, Tom Holland is authentically young. It's rare to have that talent in that young.
Exactly. No need to adult them up so soon. So, but we'll see. We'll see what
full
this
faith,
ends up being.
Faith. We're extrapolating a lot.
No. We're still going to see it. I mean, that's just happening.
Yesterday.
That's one of those
ticket.
Things.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I'm interested
intriguing.
Where this ends up being.
Same page. Now, the most exciting image for me in the last few weeks, and that is not a hyperbole, because this single image has sold me on a movie that I was so concerned about. This single image is better than the entirety of Apocalypse. This single image is a trailer for me.
Whoa.
I know. It's big. Up in the big board, we have Frank Quietly's X-Men costume in real life. We have the perfect X suits. We have suits that look like they were from the magical love child of the evolution of the Deadpool X suits and struck from the comics. I love these costumes so much. I also love that Jennifer Lawrence doesn't have her suit on, so her hands are blue and her head is blue, but she's not made up. I love that this looks to me like what I always thought they'd land on, and then like three movies went by and they never got there. They kept being like, a little more yellow. Backtrack, back to black leather. This is the landing. This is it. So once again, this movie's been very concerning. I'm not saying this erases all my worries. I'm saying this has me back on the, oh, you have my attention side. Because before I was like, I'll see it because it's an X-Men movie. Now I'm like, oh, I'm interested in more news. I'm interested in the trailer. I'm interested. Okay. Like, I'm back to being open-minded.
I love that these outfits did that for you.
I want to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to be happy. We want to be happy. And we want to, you know, have it be, you know, its own story and not something that has been shoehorned in as a B or C plot with no real character development, because you have such a large cast and you only focus on specific characters as opposed to others that you're then trying to branch off into other movies. I know. The outfits are exciting for me because of the time period that it is set in. When you think about, you know, a 90s Professor X and, you know, 90s X-Men going out and what existed then, and then what those outfits would look like.
Yeah.
That does bring this home for me. So for that, I'm still extremely hopeful and optimistic for this particular movie. I'm looking forward to seeing a trailer.
I really want to see a trailer, and I really hope this isn't the last scene. remember the last movie where they were like, you've endured this, and now suits, credits. And I was like, but there's the movie I wanted.
Liquid.
So, and I also, someone in the live chat, Eon001, not trying to be nitpicky, but this is the 90s, right? Now, why not the Jim Lee designs? If you think about it from a storytelling standpoint, we've had very minimalist suits up until this point. This is a step towards that. This is a realistic costume towards that. If you went from black leather to full-on, you know, blue with yellow arsenal pack Cyclops, and you went like full Cape Storm, which they could do at the end of this movie, then you can evolve these costumes. I would love if this is the intro costumes and then we evolve more and more and more, but it'd be very jarring for me to go from black leather through to 90s Jim Lee. I'd love that, but I'm not sure if audiences would believe it.
Yeah, I mean, you'd either have to really start there and then have that be the tone, kind of like Thor Ragnarok did with going full Kirby.
Yeah.
It was just like, hey, we're there. This is where we live. This is everything.
Right.
And you knew that from when, Thor, like, all this exposition, and then Thor's like turning. He's like, wait a moment. Wait.
And that movie's very specific. This would be hard to do in an X-Men movie. We haven't earned that yet. Not earned. We haven't gotten to the point of like trust with the characters yet, because we just met a lot of them.
Yeah.
So I am very excited for this. It has me open-minded again. Just that one image. And in hopefully obvious news, Ty Sheridan has come out saying that Jean Grey goes crazy. which, you know, she needs to. Saying, quote, Jean goes crazy in the movie. Well, Cyclops doesn't think she's going crazy. Cyclops just thinks she's got to work some stuff out. It's interesting. The drama in the movie. We treated the movie as much more of a drama versus a superhero film. That is exciting. That is what they need to do.
That is a good way to go about it. Because one of the ways that I feel like superhero films exceed, you know, expectations, they succeed, is that they focus on being a genre,
right,
and then you have superhero elements in it.
Winter Soldier changed superhero movies.
You know, or it's so permeated in the culture itself that it is completely normalized, so then you can get past that, and then you actually look at the message that it's saying, like with what Black Panther did with Wakanda, for instance. So if it has it where it is a drama with superhero elements, where it's just like, you know, Phoenix Force and...
Give me Girl Interrupted, the Phoenix Saga. I am there. You know what I mean? Like, give me a very psychological, like, give me One Floor of the Cuckoo's Nest with the Phoenix. Like, give me something that's grounded and then have, like, elements. Like, that's what we want.
Yeah, like, grounded, but don't take away our fun.
Oh, no.
Yeah, basically that, so...
But, and if they're going that way, I'm excited. We've never seen anything Simon Kinberg's directed because he's never directed before. He's written, he's been involved with the X-Men franchise this whole time.
Do we know what the budget is for this movie?
Hopefully huge. Yeah. Phoenix, like, and they so, but
he's
like, money.
He's never directed before and he's got this huge budget. I hope that that's part of like news.
Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully the AD and like the team behind him and like the leap of faith we took with the Russo brothers from TV to film was very warranted, but they had directed TV. So this is interesting because this is a writer. So
this is a huge budget to give someone who has never directed anything before.
Right. So we'll see.
Yeah, and we'll see.
Back to open-minded. Back to excited.
Yes, definitely. We'll see.
Speaking of being open-minded, New Mutants. They're apparently adding a character in reshoots. Now, the reshoots are pushing the film a bit, and reshoots have not been... There's been no established public statement as to why they're reshoots. There's been rumors that they're looking for a different tone, making it scarier, making it more like the trailer. There's, like, there's basically playground, like, gossip about New Mutants, but we haven't had them come out and be like, this is the thing. We do have quotes from the actors, including Anya Taylor-Joy, who recently talked to the playlist, saying, I do think there's a great responsibility to make sure the movie is done right, and I think we deliver the fans something they can all feel happy about and be excited about. So, I don't think it being delayed is a bad thing, because it definitely more important to make sure that we get it right than rushing to make a date. So hopefully all these reshoots and adding to the new character will give the fans an altogether satisfactory, wonderful product. Don't rush, make it right. I'm curious. I hope it's Warlock, the new character.
I still think it's like Demon Bear.
I think we got Demon Bear. Do you think he's in there?
I think they might have had it as more of a, you know, a, like, this is a powerful force, et cetera, such.
It.
And then, like, they actually, like, well, you know what? Maybe we have to double down on this and, like, the horror aspect of having Demon Bear.
And they but re-add Demon Bear?
I do enjoy Warlock being in there, though, because that would be fun.
It'd be fun. It'd be
and
different.
Then it's like, how are they going to do Warlock?
Yeah. I mean,
are we going to go there?
All the way. Because Cyber
All the way?
Cable Cyber Organic.
Because then, but then you have to think of like the world where they have it where it's like, hey, yeah, you're mutants, but you're sick and we need to fix you so that you can then go out into the world. And if we can't fix you, you don't belong in the world.
Yeah.
So then if you have this character that's, you know, part, you know,
techno-organic virus.
Exactly. If you have that, then doesn't that kind of destroy that the setup of that world?
It depends how they set them up. It really does depend. But if they tie it into Cable, then you get this awesome opportunity to tie the Deadpool and New Mutants world in together. You get the opportunity because he gets the virus and that's why he needs the arm and he's infected. Like, Cable is really interesting because he's constantly fighting this virus that is eating him alive, but he uses half of his mental ability to keep it at bay, so he's actually even more powerful, but he doesn't get to have that. So if you introduce Warlock, you can kind of segue. Plus, it'd be cool to see that character on film if they do it right.
Yeah, I just wonder about the world that they set up because it seems like it's such a realistic world. So I just wonder how they would deal with somebody who is a person like Warlock.
Right.
So it's like, how do you make that fit? But then, of course, that can be a commentary in and of itself.
Oh, of course.
Because, you know, a lot of people like to ignore things that are definitely there because it does not fit into their world.
Hated and feared by others. How do mutants react to someone that hates and feared? Like mutants have been ostracized, right? What if there's a character so crazy like Warlock that mutants have ostracized him? Like, like, is that not a commentary on the people that have been put down? So people that have been like treated like lepers, how would they react to someone that's even weirder than them?
Like, instead of embracing, layers. Then they are like, oh, I can stand on the back of this person exactly. because I'm more human
Look
than
at
they
me.
Are.
I'm better than that. So, and that's kind of what
so
I was
it's
like.
It's interesting. The, it all depends on who this new character is. Right? I like our
And that's why
though.
I like the Morlocks. The Morlocks were always cool because the Morlocks were characters that were even beneath the what the mutants considered acceptable. And the Morlocks were like, how are we lower than low? They're literally underground. And that's what I hope they do for Gifted Season 2, which Zaius Bilu, I totally agree. That's I think they can go there with this giant X-Men universe they've built. And we just had guests walk in that are going to be joining us for Jessica
yes!
Jones.
And we're not being rude. They just walked in.
We did not introduce them 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, they haven't just been sitting here.
Lurking in shadow.
Yes, we have Joelle Monique, and you know her from Collider. In fact, she just did Collider Heroes with myself and Koi on
nice,
this Monday.
Panel. Yeah.
Yes.
Just yesterday.
Yes, and she does Black Girl Nerds, and also a writer for Black Girl Nerds, and does a number of shows here on AfterBuzz TV.
Sure do. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm super excited. It's like the day I've been waiting for. I was like, when is Marvel Movie News going to call me? And it happened. It's beautiful.
Deep Jessica Jones dive. That's
yes.
the day.
Yes.
So we're probably going to go a little long today, and we started a little late, so who knows what this show might have run into, but we haven't gotten to Jessica Jones
yeah,
yet, and we know you're waiting.
And sitting next to her is Sabina Graves. You've seen her on Marvel
Hi.
Movie
she's
News
been
before.
Here before.
She's on Superhero News.
Excited to be back.
Exactly. And writer extraordinaire, director extraordinaire, and I have some really great pictures of me on Instagram thanks to this lovely woman.
And we also will be discussing two versions of Jessica Jones. We're going to do a spoiler-free, and we'll let you know when and how that ends. And then we'll do a spoiler-full, so if you're watching this show having not gotten the end yet, we got you. You're safe. And then we'll let you know, and we got you. But before I move on to out of the Fox universe, a couple people in the live chat have asked me about the Deadpool 2 rumored problems. It is so early, and I did hear those rumors, and I did hear, like, you know, the problems with the tone and the problems with the runtime and all that stuff, but I also then when I dove deeper, and if you look at a Frosty Collider, they've kind of like debunked it. One guy, a dude, was saying how bad Deadpool was, and then the rumors, because of the hype of Deadpool, have spread around to like
whatever
name. But it's a big enough story, like a bunch of news sources ran it because they thought it was multiple sources. It was one guy.
There's always one person.
That's like a contrarian. So Fox is actually suing this dude, and it's this whole thing. So Deadpool 2, take everything with a grain of salt if you hear it, because it might be all coming from one source, and we don't even know if Homie was in the screening. So like, it literally could be like one guy like, I'm gonna leak that Deadpool 2 is bad, and the internet's like, we wanted news, and then it did this whole, you know, eating its own tail thing. So don't listen to that. I just had to comment on it because enough you asked. Fake news. We'll yeah. see where it lands, but as of now, Deadpool 2 could be the greatest thing to happen to life since Black Panther. We don't know.
That's right. And our guests are joining us for the Jessica Jones review, but feel free to dive in on any of the topics that we're talking about too.
Yeah. Sure. Yes. Yeah. So by all means. Yeah. So if you guys, by all means, just chime in. There's much to discuss,
or
including
everyone.
Sammy J. Samuel Jackson has fans speculating that he's a Skrull. Now, Samuel Jackson himself shared photos which show him getting a life cast, and it's green.
Yeah,
and
which doesn't help the I'm not a Skrull, right?
Yeah, like
it doesn't help the I'm
green.
Not a Skrull argument.
Have you done these before?
I have. It's
the most
stifling.
Claustrophobic I've ever
It's
been.
Stifling. They literally stick straws in your nose to keep those, you know, the nostril nose open, and everything else is just under this warmth that eventually turns cold and hard on your face, and lay there. And this isn't minutes. This is like hours.
It has to dry, and then they have to like get it off you and crack it open. And also, the crack is the loudest.
They hit like on the side of your head to then like slowly peel it off.
It's a whole thing.
Can you wear like earbuds during that?
Depends on what they're casting a mold of.
Yeah.
Because like sometimes they're trying to get certain like, you know, details. Shape of that. So I've done this for a couple different things, and every time it's like a traumatic, claustrophobic, like buried alive nightmare.
You literally have to go to your zen place.
Yeah. For a while.
And you live there. Yeah.
So this is for something involving Captain Marvel. Everyone's assuming Skrull. The green didn't help. When I did it, it was like a blue color, so that would have helped. But the green on this definitely made people think it's Skrull based. But to me, like, we know Captain Marvel's eye patch origins Wolverine. Like, we know we're getting like that story of how that happened. So to me, this could be anything. And I loved what you said on Heroes. And what's your theory?
Yeah, because yes, we know it's Wolverine, but that's like comics. Did he establish that in the MCU? I think he just alluded to it,
but
he didn't say.
Making a horrible joke, eye patch origins apostrophe Wolverine. I wasn't saying Wolverine's involved. It's when the joke's so bad you have to explain it. Yeah, here we are, internet. Here we are.
But yeah, my theory is that you know, Captain Marvel is presented with a type of dilemma, mm-hmm. where she's got two Nick Furies right there. What's one to do? And something happens, and our actual Nick Fury gets his eye like slashed. Yeah. But then that's the way that she can tell him. Versus the Skrull.
Makes sense.
So
the old parent trap situation.
We'll see. But
I don't think he's a Skrull. I think that'd be too easy. I feel like if he's a Skrull, that gives that negate. Well, one in Winter Soldier, he got surgery. So when was he a Skrull? Was he a Skrull only in the 90s? Was real Nick Fury back? When you caught up on a Skrull,
were Skrulls the ones that were operating on him? So he was never
everyone's a Skrull.
Everyone's a Skrull. Joelle had something to say about this for on Heroes though, with like the whole Skrull Sammy J.
I'm just saying, when Samuel Jackson shows up into any large franchise, which we saw with Star Wars and his purple lightsaber, he makes it very clear, like, you have Samuel Jackson, you're going to use Samuel Jackson. I'm going to be the plot of a major twist. And the last time we saw him do anything of, like, hefty significance is Civil War.
Yeah.
And so it's time. It's time that Samuel, he's been just lurking in the background. We know Fury is this type of character anyway, who's able to just pull a Batman and just show up and rock everyone's world.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of hope it's not a Skrull, since we're already all guessing that. I hope Marvel has like a deeper twist.
I don't feel like they would have let that image come out if you actually want
that. Like, we know Marvel's had some slips, but they're usually pretty good about letting us know, like, that poster wasn't supposed to be shared on Instagram, little boy. Like,
he's not a Ruffalo. He's not Ruffalo in us here. I feel like they would have had a statement at some point, like, oh no, my phone's on.
Like, Ruffalo has been a lot more quieter than usual online.
There we go.
My favorite Ruffalo moment.
Oh, poor Ruffalo.
Because it's such an old dad move. You just be like, what? And is it online?
The last frame of his face, like, I just don't picture Samuel Jackson pulling that. Like, if the dude is, like, too cool for school to accidentally, like, reveal a moment. But if he does do it, it'd be a great, like, it's either us assuming too much or not enough. So I'm very curious watching the movie what it is and how it lands.
We'll see.
So we'll find out. Speaking of the follow-up to how they shape out the Skrulls, Infinity War had new photos released, and they are all awesome. Because anytime you get any of these people standing in a room or on a set taking a photo is hype.
Yeah, so we have Entertainment Weekly release these. And the first one, for our iTunes listeners, it shows four of our major heroes. It has Doctor Strange as Tony Stark. Has Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner. He is Bruce Banner. He's not Hulk. And then also Wong. And we also have Wong. So we also have Wong. And they're definitely staring off in the distance. Something, there is rumble going on in the background. Doctor Strange has his hands up, as does Wong. It looks like they can barely believe what they are seeing, but Strange and Wong are up for battle already.
And can we just point out, in this one photo, we have not just the science bros in the middle, but on the right, we have facial hair bros. There's a lot of bros in this one image. I'm just got to point out the happiness the facial hair bros and the science bros in one picture gives me.
Science and magic, two great tastes that taste great together.
And throw in a dash of awesome mustache, boom, you got yourself an Infinity War.
There you go.
DC officially made the worst call ever in not letting Superman keep the mustache.
Oh, absolutely. What they could have been.
Oh my god.
Look at the facial hair going on. And I
agree. Makes sense, because like, if he's dead, like, hair grows out of like a corpse anyway.
And a perfectly coiffed mustache.
Oh, yeah.
It's Superman. Yes.
I mean, admittedly, equal parts Clayne Crawford on Lethal Weapon and Superman and Man of Steel. That inspired this action. So I'm just saying, facial hair bros running the game. It's an option, society. So that picture is great. Can we flip to the next one, Aunt Anthony? And then every time I see the sleeves rolled up, it just gives me that, like, ready. Steve's ready. Like, he's just such a hyper, like, I'm gonna take everything out. Like, I love that Nomad, which is effectively who he is, whether he calls him that or not, whether that's a story point or not, when you debadge Captain America, like a 95 Civic, that is Nomad. Like, that is what he looks like, so I'm gonna keep calling him Nomad. But I love the rolled up sleeves, I love the gloves on his arms, I love that we're gonna tie a Wakandan gauntlet somewhere on there at some point. And then another one, like, give this man a shield is double time, and that's amazing. And also, if you look here, and this is a light spoiler, it's on Entertainment Weekly, so I feel like we didn't need a spoiler warning here, but you got, like, War Machine out of War Machine garb, but with techno-organic help with his legs, and yes. It looks like he's got some prosthesis that keep him moving.
He's definitely powered there, mm-hmm. is going on. And you have to wonder if that's only Tony Stark powered, or if, you know, because we know that they go to Wakanda, right. That or like T'Challa goes to them.
Shuri can fix that in 12 seconds.
You know Shuri is outfitting everybody.
I hope, like, while the screen is loading, she just, like, fixes his legs at some point, because poor Rhodey.
Oh, I know, right? But you know, she'd be able to. She saved Everett Ross, she could save him.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we're not going to get this until the very end of the movie, and it's going to be very frustrating for me to be like, Wakanda is right there! We, like, just from dude's spine. This guy's still in leg braces. Like, let's get it together.
I actually got a cool quote that I found that ties into a lot of stuff that no one's been running big enough yet that we're going to get to after the last image that I think answers a lot. Yeah. I'm just saying.
One of the most horrifying moments for me in Civil War was when War Machine, like, everything shut off, and then it's just him alone in his suit, and the ground is hurtling towards him, and I still cannot watch that. I can't watch it.
I had, like, Goose PTSD from Top Gun. I was like, Goose! Because, like, this is totally his Goose, and I was like, don't kill him! And then he crippled him. It's rough.
I mean, the fact that Vision gets there, like, seconds after he lands, too. Like, the chase of everyone trying to catch him, I think, is what makes it so horrific. The fall is awful, but, like, everyone being like, I'm trying, sorry. Yeah. This is kind of horrifying.
And we're talking about, you know, like, the epic change of life circumstances with him. We're not really commentating on, you know, people with differently abled or anything like that. We're not commenting on that. It's just for this to be, like, a skirmish that happened with them, and, you know, they were all kind of pulling their punches and everything, and then you know, it's all fun and games until War Machine gets, you know, plummeted into a field.
And then lastly, we have the Black Widow herself looking more and more like a Skrull.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She's a Skrull. I'm just saying.
Just because of her blonde hair. Yes. She's a Skrull.
It's enough.
You know who doesn't have eyebrows? Skrulls. Yeah. So that's about that image, and it looks like they're in the where they were in Civil War. It reminds me of that kind of office room. I don't know if this is New Avengers Tower, if this is somewhere Starkey. Doesn't quite look Wakandan to me because of the Americanized, like, atmosphere. It doesn't look like Wakanda.
Yeah, it looks like a cafeteria or something behind
them. Sorry, Amanda, we keep flipping back. We'll go to the next one. We're ready.
I just picture a lot of baked goods behind them.
Avengers lunch.
That's just me. I love croissants.
All right, and then we got Shuri herself.
Wearing her Afrofuturistic awesomeness. I need this coat. Or smock. Whatever it is.
Yeah, I look forward to Hot Topic bringing me all of Shuri goodness.
Yes. Right? Don't sleep on my money for this.
And it looks waterproof, which is nice. And it looks like they're talking to Mark Ruffalo here in banner form. And I'm guessing on the left we have Scarlet Witch. It looks to me like Scarlet Witch.
It looks like longer hair, does not look blonde. So, yeah, I think that's a fair
estimate. Which, talk about a team-up I want to see. Like, Shuri and Scarlet Witch could be doing, like, tech magic. All about that life.
Mm-hmm. I want to be in on that brunch.
I want to hear a scientific conversation between Banner and Shuri about, like, technology and advancements and, like, more science bros.
Hopefully that's what this is.
Yes.
That's what I saw it as. It's like, it's him trying to understand the tech, because he was not around for Civil War. He hasn't met Black Panther.
He lost 2 years of his life.
He was in another dimension with Thor. Like, not dimension, but he was in another, like, world Hulk. With Thor. So he comes back as Banner for the first time, meeting Wakandans for the first time, trying to keep up with tech that he's already missed, plus meeting Shuri would be like...
He's like, what is this world? I like it.
I'm very excited. So we got one more, I think. And then we have a variation on the image. This has been in a number of the different trailers coming out. This has been a very paused moment in teasers because the moment when someone sent me M'Baku standing behind them a few weeks ago that, like, I just hadn't known because it was right after Black Panther. It was, like, Saturday after Black Panther. And people were like, oh! And I just, like, the fact that M'Baku has been there the whole time hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
So this image of them standing with the Wakandans and just the Lord of the Rings scope of what's about to go down and Bucky with his arm and, like, the Wakandan tech of his arm. Have you guys seen the Entertainment Weekly cover with the arm?
I have.
It's so clearly Wakandan, and I love it so much.
I just wish his tank top also looked well put together. His arm is so dope, and then you're like, who dressed you?
Yeah, Shuri dressed him.
He dressed himself.
I think that's Shuri tech.
And I wonder if he goes by White Wolf. I wonder, because Winter Soldier, the concept...
They called him that.
Yeah, because the concept of Winter Soldier is, like, you know, the amnesia dealing with all that stuff, and he's not Bucky because he's fighting, so technically he's a man without an alias, But White Wolf at the end of the last film, I wonder if he like leads as White Wolf. I wonder if that's what his moniker is now. That's
yeah, and for people that are the comic book readers or those that aren't, White Wolf is actually Hunter, and he's leader of the Hatut Sarazi and Black Panther, and that's kind of like a secret police type of a thing. They operated for a long time under Black Panther's last one was T'Chaka, who was a good king, but also was a king that would turn a blind eye to the secret police. Yeah, for doing that. While T'Challa had issues with that, and while they still want to uphold their king, they have issues with being discontinued at the same time. But with Hunter, he is adopted by the king. There was a plane crash that happened, and then there's like this. It was a little baby, and you know, was found by these villagers. And one of the women is like, "Oh, I can't give birth, so this is like God, Bast giving me a baby," and takes it to the king to be like, "Oh, we want this to be our baby." And the king's like, "Oh, this is my baby now. This is Wakanda's baby."
That's actually the whole thing.
That's actually in it. Yeah. I will raise this as Wakanda's
baby. Solomon story. Like, screw cutting the baby in half. I'm just taking the baby. Neither one of you is responsible.
This is my baby. Exactly.
Yeah. But Hunter is white, and he becomes like a brother to T'Challa. And then that's the whole line. Yeah.
Actually, Amanda, do you want to? Well, here's the arm for one. Here's the awesomeness that is the arm. And it's. I love how Wakandan tech is so specific, you instantly recognize it. I love that they built this universe so thoroughly that it's like obvious. So that arm looks incredible. I love all the Entertainment Weekly covers. I'm wondering if there's any like thing to the pairing. I wonder if it's just like who was there the day.
They seem a little random. Yeah, but there's somewhere I'm like, I love these two characters. I think it's Star-Lord and Shuri that are together. And I'm like, those are my two faves. So
yeah, I think they were just selling magazines.
Yeah,
so they're so. Like, hey, people like these people. If we put a Collier and Shuri on one, everybody's just gonna buy that one.
I think the excitement of it, like Avengers brought our core team together, but yeah. It seems like Infinity War is going to be mashing like whole galaxies together.
Yes.
So the excitement of like who's gonna see who, because I know what I'm most excited for is like our Bucky and Iron Man gonna cross paths.
Oh yeah.
Whoa, right.
The last time they saw each other, not good at all. You put a shield in his heart monitor, essentially. There's so many different conflicts about to happen, ready to happen, and it's, I don't know what's gonna happen.
There's gonna be a snark off with Star Wars and Spider Man.
I just ordered a rolling luggage from Box Lunch. It's Iron Man and has like his.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
And it lights up and it's amazing. But then I was like, but what if he dies? And I'm gonna just every time I look at my luggage, I'm gonna be really upset.
It's in memoriam.
It's in memoriam. Tony Stark. This is how he uses his armor now.
No one capitalizing on Iron Man's 2's briefcase with the Iron Man suit by making the outside look like that. Shame on you, merchandisers. That could have been the coolest thing. So I'd rock a briefcase. Like the only reason I have a briefcase is if it looked like it was an Iron Man suit.
Like, for instance, if I had a briefcase, it would look like a Money in the Bank briefcase.
Yeah.
Because that's how I roll.
It's all right there.
And if that briefcase doesn't exist, how dare you? How dare you? And you get on making that, ma'am.
Because I know there's, like, the suitcase where it's just the pattern of it, but this one is actually in the shape of his,
that's cool.
Like, nice.
And has the arc reactor, and it lights up. And it's sort of great. And I
Box Lunch are amazing. Yeah. Stay amazing.
I'm going to steal your luggage. That's just happening.
We have a bunch of the cover photos, and I think we should flip through them while I read these quotes, because watching me say words is not as exciting as these covers. So these covers are all great. We're going to flip through them, but these quotes that no one's reporting on enough. Chadwick Boseman and Mark Ruffalo sat down, and Chadwick was asked, "Chadwick, you know the tone of Black Panther and the character overall is really at odds with the likes of Guardians of the Galaxy's tone, for instance. Those two movies couldn't be more different in that way. What's it like for your character, as much as you can say, to get involved with Peter Quill and those folks?" Boseman responded, quote, "You know, that's a good question. No, seriously, because that is the difficulty in making a movie like this. You have to see the flavor of each one of them. So I think what is interesting is to have them enter our space, which is not something that happens all the time. I think it's important for us to give the flavor of Wakanda, and they're really adjusting to our space. So that would be part of the fun of the movie. And the Guardians entering it, obviously there is a clash, all that conflict, but it's not conflict between us necessarily. So it's an emotional, psychological, and social conflict." Continuing on, he said, "What can you say about the scene you're shooting today? The Avengers coming to Wakanda." And this is what I think is interesting. I don't think the Soul Stone's there, because he says, quote, "Are you asking why they are here? You have a world problem with Thanos, a problem that affects everyone in the world. So Wakanda is on the world stage, and we're obviously advanced in a way where we can help with the situation. So that is all that's happening here." I don't think the Soul Stone's there.
Yeah.
I think they're asking Wakandans for help.
Where is the Soul Stone?
Right, because that sounds
where
like...
Where is it? it.
Unless he's like pulling a Feige and just lying.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like Wakandans.
I don't think he is. So that just seems like
Stone is in Atlantis, and that's our cutscene at the end. I really feel like that's because that's the next world really that Marvel is going to have to explore, and especially as we open up to all these secret societies, and Black Panther being the first to do it.
Right.
And
especially, we've almost got all the Illuminati now.
Yeah. And especially his insistence on the fact that, like, look, we are a global stage now. No spoilers, but that's something kind of Wakanda is looking to do, it seems like. Yeah, I'm hoping that Atlantis is our cutscene, and they're like, the final stone. We have to hide it.
Because we know that Thanos doesn't have it. I mean, right. he has reality and power, right? Yeah. So he has those, too. So we know, I'm going to say Loki had his hero moment to save what was left of the refugees. I'm going to say to then give him the Tesseract. And then, obviously, he maybe took out the collector to... Well, no, no. Xandar. Mm-hmm. He took... Yeah. So he might have had to take out them to... Ooh,
I mean, either way,
to get the power
stone. Mysterious last stone that doesn't have any... We have no clues yet, theoretically, unless there's like a deep cut in Iron Man 1, because Feige definitely would have done that.
Yeah, and it's not Heimdall. I mean, we can all agree on that.
Yeah, I think so.
Right?
That would be crazy.
That's just...
I do think it's cosmic, though. I think it's out. I don't know. I think it's either Atlantis or...
the gardener has it.
Or something like deep cut space. And there is a giant spoiler on IMDb. Do not go there. There is a character that's listed, unless you want to know. I'm very upset that I know. We're not going to report on it.
We're not
sucks.
Reporting on it because I don't know.
Yeah, there's a giant spoiler. I'm very upset. So don't go. Unless you want to, then go, but don't talk about it.
I like this is like the don't push that button situation where I'm like, the red button, but what is it? Because I don't know. Information.
It was told to me verbally by way of, hey, did you hear? And then they said it. And I was like, No.
Is that in a trailer I haven't seen? Why are you sharing this information with me?
Yeah, it came out. So I'm upset. Anyway, so don't dive too deep in the internet, gang. And there was also another quote I thought was interesting, saying that Mark Ruffalo said, quote, Banner probably knows more about Thanos than probably anybody, and he's really trying to impress on everybody how dangerous he is. It's a little bit of a Chicken Little situation. He comes in screaming bloody murder. He's seen what damage he can cause and how powerful he is, and the entire group is in disarray, so he's also getting caught up on what's happening here and trying to get them to transcend their differences and impress upon them how much danger they're actually facing. All of our theories are right.
Yeah. So a whole lot of drama.
Stuff happens in space.
Cousins fighting cousins.
Asgard situation, as we've theorized, and then Banner gets Silver Surfered. Remember in the Infinity Gauntlet where Silver Surfer gets smashed down to Earth, and everybody's like, "What's going on?" And he's like, "I gotta tell you, bud." So I think that's the shot we theorized from the Doctor Strange moment. This practically confirms it.
Yeah. So we know. Well, going from this,
I feel like he's going to get punched into Banner form.
I think he's going to be so injured.
And then everybody else is going to be like, what?
Yeah.
What? But yeah, no, it totally seems like, Thanos is going to take out the biggest threat, which is Earth's Asgard, Wakanda. So he sends his Outriders. He sends, you know, his, number three guy.
Outriders and Wakanda.
Sends Cole Obsidian, to take out Wakanda, and then Wakanda's gonna hand him his butt. Mm-hmm. That's just Wakanda. This is, you don't come for Wakanda.
No.
Wakanda comes
for
you.
The Outriders for sure. And then the last quote is interesting to me about Hulk himself. The reporter at Slash Film, by the way, has these. Slash Film is great. Slash Film asks, is he monosyllabic in this? We're starting to find a Hulk. The division between Hulk and Banner is starting to blur a little bit, so you have a Hulk that can actually express himself without being angry. There are sentences, yes, we're getting into like 5-year-old.
Did they not see Thor Ragnarok? Of course he can talk.
But like the advancing. Like it sounds like he's not just the angry water fire.
No, like, he was doing full sentences. He was at least doing it at a 5 to 6-year-old level, like maybe 7-year-old, where he's like, Thor, the Hulk like fire.
Oh yeah,
Thor
like sitting in the bed gets a little 5-year-old.
Like yeah, Thor like water.
So it sounds like he goes a little further.
He used the word smoldering.
Touche.
I mean,
touche.
That depicts that's at least 8-9 years old, let's say, or that's an extremely we're talking like Charles Wallace precocious 6-year-old
dream scenario. He gets punched back into Banner, and then when he comes back, he's Grey Hulk, and he's in the position
Jesus.
Can you imagine? So he can turn back into Hulk, and then he does under pressure, and he's Grey Hulk, and he can speak, and we get the full...
Well, Feige's already said that, like, instead of giving Hulk a solo movie, they're going to try to space out
Planet
Hulk.
Down.
Right.
Yeah. Films.
What a great arc.
Yeah.
What a great new
arc. It sounds like this is going to be part 2 after Thor Ragnarok, which has a lot of sense. So, man.
How cool would that be?
It would be freaking awesome, like, dude.
Like a Mr. Fix-It situation, I would be, yeah. So, we have our last story to go through before we dive into Jessica Jones, spoiler-free, then spoiler-full, and that is, in the Netflix universe, everyone's favorite show, Iron Fist, is getting a season 2.
Everyone. Everyone's favorite show.
Iron Fist season 2.
Everyone loves it.
The best thing about what Iron Fist 2 could be is that if they go full Heroes for Hire, and I think that Marvel reads blogs, Marvel listens to the fans, Marvel knows what we want, and they know we want more Luke Cage Iron Fist, because one of the best things in the Defenders was seeing the dynamic between those two. Their scenes together were great. We have Finn Jones. He's been hopefully living, sleeping, and breathing in a dojo, and he's learning as much as he can. And also, I love your idea about the mask. I love the idea of...
Yes, mask this man. Please, please put a mask on Finn Jones so that you can get a stunt performer that can do all of the Iron Fist stuff. I think you're asking too much of an actor that did not grow up with martial arts
to be the best martial artist of all time.
To be that person. And the simple thing to do is the same thing you do with Matt Murdock. Go ahead and have him protect his personality. He's a billionaire. There is no reason why he wouldn't protect his personality, his identity. Thank you. He wouldn't protect his identity from the rest of the world.
And there's no reason
at
not
this
to
point.
for the character. There's no reason
to. If you're so against, you know, the green and yellow, I understand. Go with a different color choice, but
look at
cover
Daredevil
his
season,
face.
Daredevil season 1 suit we loved for an entire season. We loved that suit, and like we got it the last episode. That means 12 hours we were cool with that ninja suit. Iron Fist is a literal ninja, maybe dress him like a ninja. So
what?
For me, the
They're
idea
fighting in like your button up and your tight pants.
And it's not disrespectful to Finn Jones himself. He doesn't know kung fu since birth,
right?
Because
yeah,
he's
which
an
is
actor.
Fine. You got him for other reasons than his martial arts, so don't make the man do martial arts.
Season 2 more
for
daughters,
him and for us.
More Daughters of the Dragon.
Yes, Colleen Wing, Simone Missick,
Shang-Chi, bring him into the show.
The
like,
bromance is real.
Look,
bring us the bromance.
If we could also maybe get like more of a Zen kind of, like, my biggest problem in watching Iron Fist season 1 is that Finn is like, he's like a Zen dude. Like he's a guy who's mastered his martial arts. But here we have a guy who's always complaining, who's always
he's
finicky,
such a
who
brat.
Can't sit still.
He's such a brat.
Who doesn't have any long form like thought process. If we could get like an actual guy who's like, okay, what are we doing? How can I help the daughters? Like, I have an actual plan. I'm gonna meditate and think on this. I'll be an actual adult. I think that would help the series go really far, and I wanna see how it blends into like the greater world at large. Let's bring in Heroes for Hire.
It's right
time.
There. It's time.
Let's
and I think that's what they're going to do. And I think, so we have a couple images real quick.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, Kung Fu Finn Jones. Looks like he's taking a guy out. He's in at least a hood. And I think that Chris Brewster or Ilram Choi should play freaking Iron Fist. Those are both actual ninjas. Stunt guys, really, like, Iron Fist could be a stunt guy. And then we got one more picture, I think. And I cannot tell who that is. Oh, wait, that last image was... Let me see. The screen's super dark. Who is the woman here?
Alice Eve?
Is it Alice Eve? Oh, yeah, it's Alice Eve, who we don't, I think, know the character she's playing
yet. I don't believe we do.
So, Alice Eve fighting Finn Jones. Finn Jones on his back. We know nothing about this except for this shows us Alice Eve in fighting form and that there is a confrontation, and Alice Eve is great. So, I'm excited. Now, the moment we've been waiting for. The
Yay!
Dive in. Let us discuss spoiler-free. No
spoiler-free
spoilers.
First. Just
Jessica Jones.
You know, so...
We'll start with the
our guests. Yes,
yeah.
Our guests, please.
Well, we were talking a little bit in our ride over. I know a lot of people are complaining about the initial start pace of the show.
Yeah.
But to me, I really love the pace. I feel like one of my biggest complaints about the Marvel shows is that, and I guess a lot of Netflix shows tends to be the pacing, but I think when you're dealing with recovering addicts in multiple characters, taking it slow and figuring out, like, you really get to learn their tics. Like, you really see someone backsliding into a lifestyle that they don't want to be living. You get to really see, like, what a daily fight against addiction is like. You get to see what someone coming to terms with their addiction is like. I think if you're going to address that theme, it should be done well. I have a lot of people in my life who are either addicts or children of addicts, and they cannot watch shows about addiction because they're not accurate or honest in their portrayal. This is honest, and I think if you can get through maybe the first half, if it's dragging for you, if you're not finding where it's clicking, get through those first 6 episodes. But episode 7, it really takes off, and all of that stuff, for my money, really paid off.
I think that Yeah, I kind of agree with that sentiment, though, about the beginning of the season having this, like, really, like, slow trudge start. Also, Trish was really annoying. I could not stand her. I still can't stand her. And I think it's probably just not, it's not going to be working for her. I don't know. There was this sort of sense where the season starts off with Trish basically becoming a savior for Jessica and be like, you're going to deal with your stuff. And I'm going to, like, dig up your past for you. And Jessica's, like, not about it at first, and it kind of felt really forced, and I'm not
this
sure.
This is a manic person slipping back into their addiction. This is a manic person who says, I don't want to deal with the issues I'm having, let me solve your issues. Like, if I can deal with your issues, maybe my life is better. It's ugly and it's awful, especially given the Trish we had first season. It's such a rock and a place of comfort for Jessica, and the smart one, the one you want Jessica to listen to. You're like, yes, follow your sister's example. Look at what she's been able to do with her life. Like, it's incredible. So it's to viewers' credit, I understand being like, I don't want to watch a person that I admired one season fall so hard. But again, it's just honest. Like, it's an honest portrayal. And I think, like, to the, all the actors' credits, I think they pulled it off really well.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, but to piggyback off of what you're saying, Joelle, yeah, that's actually a reason why I very much enjoyed season two. I enjoyed season one more, but yes. I enjoyed what season two had to say, definitely. And one of the things that I think it depicts in a very honest and not in your face way, it's like in a quiet way, like how life will be telling you certain cycles and things that you keep on doing, and it takes like an awareness for you to even realize that you're doing that. I feel like with Jessica Jones season two, it shows you that pattern in other people's lives, like the slippery slope of addiction. And you have that with Malcolm, where, you know, in season one, you know, got him off the drugs, thank God, got him off of that, but he still has an addictive personality. And with that, he then looks to Jessica Jones to be like, hey, I'm going to do something good with my life. I'm going to make your business better. I'm going to do good for you. You have to let me do this because this is how I work. And then while he's doing that, you know, he's replacing addiction with another addiction.
Another addiction.
And then you have Trish doing the exact same thing where she's like, you're going to deal with all of your issues, like you were saying, because she can't really deal with hers, and then she replaces an addiction with another addiction as we find out as we go along. And that's with a lot of characters. You have that with Trish's mother. I mean, you have that. You even have that with a Jerry. Was what?
With Jerry, too.
You have that with Jerry, most definitely. In fact, not only that with Jerry do you have that slippery slope of addiction, but you also have what I think I would probably go through. I'm not saying that I'm going to throw, you know, a streetwalker drug party, but I am saying that I would definitely escape from the horrid circumstances of my life or what I thought my life was. So I feel like Jessica Jones does what it did in season one, but in a very quiet and realistic way. And I feel like people are so used to in your face with messages that they don't realize when it's like, hey, you know, this very quiet note that's under your door that you read the note and it's like, oh, wow, that's my life, or that's the life of my friends, or that's the life of this person that I'm trying to help right now. And I feel like that's what season two does with the first half. And then with the second half, there's all this payoff from all this quiet setup that happened.
For me, the show represented the first season, Jessica Jones being a brick wall, her being fortified, her being like having endured all this stuff and just drinking away her problems. The second season for me was after, we're not going to spoil season two yet, but I'm going to spoil season one. I'm sorry. After what she did to Purple Man, that to me was second season was an open wound. She was a broken character. We saw every episode more salt being poured in and just her slowly devolving. And I thought it was an interesting take to have such a strong character be exposed, not as weak, but as broken. And I really liked that this was a story of like this what was the Bechdel test? This was a show of breaking that because it was all women, and like I love that they dealt with female themes that I wouldn't normally be exposed to as a white dude, in ways that didn't feel like they were beating me over the head with it or pandering. And they also didn't villainize every man. They villainized a lot of men for doing horrible guy things, but like Malcolm didn't turn out to be like bad guy. And I loved that the male love interest had so many ups and downs, and I love that we didn't ever have like this horrible moment of toxic masculinity that felt like it was for the sake of toxic masculinity. Everything felt like it had a shape that evolved the story and moved arcs forward. And I also loved that each and every woman on the show had such a thorough arc. I've never thought I would care that much about Jerry. I never thought I would be so invested in a subplot that involved a character that was so brusque. Because you've got a show about brusque women. You've got a show about women that can handle their own.
Jerry's an a-hole.
And then you get hardest Jerry's woman, and you feel the most for her.
Right.
So it's, for me, this was a really important show for women, as not being one, it's a weird thing to say, but I felt like it was really, like, while I was watching, I was like, oh, I'm really glad this is here for people that need it.
No, so but to your credit, I feel like oftentimes when we say, like, oh, the show features women, there's an automatic connotation that, okay, well, it's specifically for women. And I think to your point, what you're saying is, like, as a dude, like, this was a show where I got to, like, I love women, and I got to watch women being dope, and that's what I want out of content. Like, I just want to be able to watch a show where I'm like, I care for these people.
It's a female-driven show that was driven by females, and it felt like that. And there was a moment in, it's not a spoiler, I promise you, there's a moment later in the series where she, like, takes off her clothes, and I was like, oh, this is a moment showing vulnerability, not sexualizing a beautiful body.
Yes!
And it was an actual conscious moment of being like, oh, I'm not turned on by a body, I feel awful that she's vulnerable. And it was really cool as a dude to be like, hey, I'm not gonna pause this because naked I'm like, oh fuck, she's so broken and messed up. And I've never broken on the show in the 3 years of being on the show. I've never done it, but that's how much that affected me, being like, ugh. And like, that's beautiful. So that really.
And as a female, I enjoyed the levels of the males for this particular, like with Malcolm, he had such an interesting dynamic. Mm-hmm. It was like there were so many levels. It's like he's trying to find himself. And he's trying to help other people along with just like just crushing circumstances for where he existed right then and trying to find his own way. That including, you know, like the love interest and then you know, Chin and everything that happened with those people. I really enjoyed. Okay, because
we're about to go spoilers. If just
we're very used to big bads.
Yeah.
Right.
We're very used to big bads, and I enjoy a story that doesn't necessarily pin all the bad on one person. Mm-hmm. That there is such a gray area, and it all depends on circumstances, and people are put in circumstances and they can do bad, horrid things in that while still being a victim of those circumstances and those things.
No, that was very tactful.
On point.
We all had a little piece of non-spoilers. We've all seen it, right? All four of us.
Well, before we move on from non-spoiler, I did want to like make a note for like a lot of the comic book readers, like I love Alias. It's one of my favorite. So I think there might be a sort of like an issue with a lot of people who love the character wanting the character to be similar to what she was in the comics. But you know, like the work that like Brian Michael Bendis did was amazing. But at the end of the day, it is like a Jessica told through a male gaze, and we're seeing a Jessica told through a woman's gaze, like what the character would be. So I think that it's really great that we're getting a different incarnation of the character and getting to know her, and just the power of how this season has allowed all these characters to be vulnerable is
that's a great point.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Full spoilers now.
Full spoilers.
Spoilers.
This is the full spoiler alert.
We can't help you more than this.
Yes. We'll wave our hands again if we have enough time to do Mary Marvelites today. But spoilers.
Spoilers. Now, the thing that I loved the most, and I now personally, I like season one more. There are other shows that I identify with more, so I can't separate like that from my viewing of it. Like, I'm a Daredevil season two diehard, and I'm a Punisher diehard, because those are both shows I didn't expect as much out of. So like, I don't want to rate shows because that's not fair to shows. They're so different tonally. But for me, I can just compare season one to season two. I think it's fair. I like season one more for Kilgrave and the shape that it allowed the show to take. And it was actually a really interesting thing for me for the episode of Kilgrave being like, I missed you! And that was a really weird moment to like have in a second season to be like, oh, that thing! So for me, the show had some issues where I love that they had all different directors for every episode, but at points it made the show feel like different for each episode, and that threw me. There were moments where I was like, this is a great show. Oh, why is that person acting like a different character? And like, why is the tone? And that works sometimes, but for me that was a flaw, and I want to get through the flaws first because there's a lot of good, but flaw-wise, that was really jarring. And I also at points felt like the writing kind of had, I haven't seen superhero writing in a while, but there were moments where it was like, superhero! And he brought you back to grounded, and I was like, okay, jarring tone, and that might have been the directors, might have been the having so many different writers, that might have been all that, but overall, it definitely felt like one thing, and I talked about it in Heroes with you guys, that I loved that it was able to do really, really, really grounded and really super heroic. This show had the Wizard in it, and that felt right, and that's insane. We got Wizard, and it also didn't pull punches. Like, it killed Nuke episode 2 or 3, mm-hmm. and it didn't make the show feel cheap. It made it feel like there were stakes, so there was a lot of good, involving some of the bad that it's just probably having so many directors, but it was really cool to me to have a show that had such high stakes that kept escalating. Because this is the first Marvel show, I think, that this and Punisher, I think, got better as they went along. I think the second half of the show was better than the first, and that, like, usually there's that moment halfway through the season where you're like, oh, new villain! Oh, new villain. So for me, this really Luke worked. Cage. It just kept getting better, so I really loved the second half of the show, and I really think it was cool to see a character evolve in a way that felt so on track. So,
totally. I wanted to clarify something. When you say superhero writing, do you mean like all of the kind of almost to camera one-liners?
Yeah, it felt like
I really enjoyed those. I know that it's cheesy, and I could definitely see where it might take somebody out of mm-hmm. what it is we're going for. But to me, those were the moments that were like breaths of fresh air. I think as much as season one is about initial trauma and like trauma, for lack of a better word, is exciting. Like, there's a lot happening to you as you address it. There's a lot of you, like Jessica swinging like a giant pendulum, like to different ways to coax her trauma. And then on top of that, you have Kilgrave, who's just like this out of sight villain. Like to me, when the show first came out, I was doing a lot of comparing Kilgrave to Daredevil's first villain. Why am I blanking on his name?
Kingpin?
Yes, Kingpin? Okay. To Kingpin. Because I thought Kingpin is a masculine version of a villain. Mm. You know, he's all strength, he's all bulk, he's all about power and owning and possessing. Whereas Kilgrave is more like, I'm going to get into your mind, and mm-hmm. I'm going to know you better than you know yourself, and then I'm going to use that to destroy you from the inside. Which is a trait we typically give to female villains. And so to see those two, but that's like Kilgrave,
yeah. I like that idea of
I hadn't thought of that. It's yeah, cool.
Kilgrave terrifies me to my core. Like everything about Kilgrave was horrifying. Every time he showed up on screen, I was like, I can't. Like I have anxiety, and I have to watch the show very slow. What I loved about season two was like the idea of Kilgrave is always there. The way they use purple in season two is so good.
So good.
It just shows up in everything. Like when another guy is hitting on her, even suddenly it's purple, and it's that inkling of like. Oh, yeah.
He's
like,
always there.
He
lived in our head for years.
Kilgrave is somebody's ex-boyfriend, you know?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like...
Well, they're ex in general,
ex in general. Season one was my favorite. But I think it's really interesting with, like, Jessica Jones is that we're so used to going back to some of the bigger universe of, like, oh, season two, there's just, like, back fighting crime and, like, taking names and stuff. But there are a few sort of, like, universes that deal with traumas in a very specific way. So with Jessica Jones, we had that beginning where it was, like, the PTSD. And then in season two, it's sort of still discussing the aspects of addiction with Jessica.
Well, it's because once you face your fears, like, how do you move forward and continue to live your life? Because I think a lot of people think of addiction as, like, you beat it. You no longer want to drink. When, in fact, it's like,
no, you've identified the issue, but now you have to figure out how to, like, live with it and cope with it or move away from it. And it reminds me a lot how with Guardians Volume 1 and Volume 2, where like they felt very similar in certain things that they were tackling with. Like the first film, like, oh, we're a family. The second film, what are the dynamics within our family and how are we going to address that? I think it's great that these movies are allowing themselves to explore these shows and movies are allowing themselves to explore these different concepts.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the very human fallacies that we have being kind of showcased in this. Like something that Jessica Jones kept on going back to is that she's like, hey, I killed Kilgrave. I felt the pop in his neck. And we're kind of trained that once you conquer something, hey, you did it.
Yeah.
You move on. Guess what? That's wiped clean. That no longer exists anymore. And that's not true. I mean, like to do a thing with like Simpsons, you know, we're not a countertop that you can just wipe off with some bleach. We're the bath mat that's in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And it all sticks there. You wash it, but is it ever really that clean? And that's kind of what it is. And then for Jessica to continuously be broken and we're with like we're in the spoiler section. Mm-hmm. So with things with her mother and figuring out that the big bad was her mom, but her mom was supposed to be dead, and now she's alive, and you have your mom back, and but your mom has, you know, has an effect done to her out of her control, and I'm guessing that it was like actual brain damage.
Yeah.
With a car accident. I don't believe it was the gene therapy. I don't believe it was that. And so if she had been able to come back, she would still be like this. And I feel like that is a very real medical thing that mm-hmm. just happens. But to have this, and then to have her go back on what she does consider to be the line. And she even discusses this where she's like, the line keeps on moving. I keep on stepping over it. And it's this, that was so powerful to me. Mm-hmm. I absolutely, because when you think about it, that resonates with every other character that you have there. With Malcolm, where he replaces his, was it heroin? Well, his drug addiction, heroin, with sex. So he becomes a sex addict.
Can we just give Malcolm some credit for that arc, man? Malcolm was so good in this season. Like, seeing Malcolm go from, like, strung out to healthy season one, seeing him go from healthy to, like, dude, season two, like, suited up, nice hair, like, ready to take on the world, and then working for that guy.
So
like,
swole.
Yeah, like,
yeah. He did get good.
I was like, well, okay, bro, get it, Malcolm.
And the way they played with addiction for, like, even working out, like, the way mm-hmm. that one scene of him, like, shirtless working out, it didn't feel healthy. And I really liked that as a dude that's, like, okay, I go through spurts of addiction to the gym, and, like, sometimes it's not healthy. Like, there are points as a guy where you're, like, guys do suffer from body dysmorphia at times, and guys do mm-hmm. suffer from addiction at times in ways that, like, don't get translated well. And when, mm-hmm. for a female-driven show to translate male addiction to sex and working out well, I was like, ah, Malcolm. Like, it was really cool to have a character that a guy can watch and go, like, that's my guy, that's my point of view in the series. And Malcolm just had that, and he was handled so well. It never felt trite, never felt cliche. And a better mm. example of that comic writing I thought of, when she ran out of the spray right before the thing. That to me is comic writing. It's not
yeah. necessarily. Yeah, you felt it, because all the time I'm like, this is gonna run out yeah. eventually,
and
girl.
Then she,
like,
the moment
yeah.
she doesn't notice it running low, she's just like, I had some. Oh no, I'm out. Oh, I've got a job interview. That to me is like comic writing, where it's okay, like, yeah. This is a bit much.
Yeah. Like, I felt for her, though. I felt for her because she had had such a sheltered life where she either had Dorothy or Jessica Jones holding her up. And even when she went to, and I'm talking about Trish, even when she went to, like, the bottom rung, about to blow a guy in the bathroom, that happened in the series. Like, even getting to that point, and then, but Jessica's there,
yeah.
you know, that kind of a thing. So to get to a point where she's hiding this again, and she's hiding it semi-successfully, and then to get to the point where she's like, oh, okay, you know, I'm doing good, I'm doing, you know, I did the thing, and then... And yeah. it's gone. And it's like, what? And then just like the tumbling down the slope yeah. from there. And oh my God, I can't believe what she did. I can't believe that she was so selfish as a friend and as a person, and so wrapped up in her own mess, so jealous about having powers, that she took away the most precious thing that Jessica Jones had.
Yeah.
And I think also that had to do something with her taking it away. And that there was precious, that little demon in there.
The most precious thing that Malcolm had too. She took away sobriety.
She took that away.
Malcolm's sobriety.
This is
Jessica
what addiction
Jones,
does
like, that was
to people.
For me was when this, she was destroying
this is what I'm talking about that note underneath your door, like this soft buildup mm-hmm. to all of this, so it doesn't come out of anywhere. That's why I think as a package, they deliver this so well. And I was like, ah, I got kind of goosebumps right now, because it's not a feel good thing. It's yeah. not. I mean, it's a catharsis in some ways, where it's like, oh, hey, I'm not that messed up,
yeah.
or my family is not that messed up, because this is, people go through this.
Everyone felt really real in their delivery of how their arc landed. Like, I love the dad just being a dad the whole time. Like, he was always protecting
yeah.
his kid.
And Carl, Dr.
Right.
Carl,
yeah.
He wasn't a bad scientist. Not like Carl Malus in
yeah.
in the actual comics. That's a mad scientist.
Yeah.
That is a ridiculous caricature of a person demon.
Of a person demon.
That's who Dr. Carl Malus is in
comics. Can we give some credit to that awesome Trish moment that I didn't know was going to happen?
Is it the raking the
no,
face?
No, the phone drop. When the phone dropped and she caught it on her foot, and you realize,
oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Well, I was like,
she might have powers.
That was a really cool, like, yeah. does she, doesn't she moment, mm-hmm. because it's the very end. She probably has powers, but the combination of the cat moment there,
yeah, where she's
and
like,
then that,
yeah.
like, oh, yeah.
I wanted to ask you guys, did you feel, because I'm reading some reviews online and everything, so some people felt that after Trish kills her mother, which I also think she was upset that Jessica might have a mom who cared and loved
basically
her.
Replaced her as her mom.
Well, yeah. Trish never had like a good mom. Either. You know what I mean? Like, which only gets very hammered home this season.
Yeah.
And the fact that Jessica has a mom who loves her and wants to go out of the country with her. Yeah. And, like, we'll go to freaking war zones and, like, tear it up, boo. Mm-hmm. I think, as you say, like, that's Trish's inner monster was coming out a little bit. But I wanted to know if you guys thought, like, I read some reviews where they said Jessica understood that her mother had to die, but she was upset that Trish was one who had to pull the trigger. I didn't read the scene that way. Like, for me, Jessica would never have ever let her mother die.
Yeah, I think it would have been the raft in her future. Yeah. Which I think that's what
I love
happened.
That the raft was mentioned but never shown, because that gives Marvel the opportunity to make it whatever they want. I think it was an excuse. I think she just didn't know what to say, and that was like a knee-jerk answer. Like, but it, because when you're angry, you just say stuff. I think no matter what, like, she saw that as a betrayal, so it wouldn't matter that if her mom died, like, that's not the solution.
I also have to wonder if Trish wasn't Jessica Jones's addiction.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the show. There's so many Venn diagrams of relations.
Well, yeah, because I think like with Trish, she had Jessica basically propping her up for most of her life, but then also like there was this threat of like losing your family.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I have to. Ooh. It is 3:30. We went half an hour, so we got to start wrapping up. But next week we'll try to touch on some more spoilers. We'll try to dive back in a little bit. We can't make it the whole show again, but Jessica Jones is 13 hours, so 20 minutes on it is never going to be enough. Obviously, there's so much to dissect.
Obviously, it isn't.
Where can they find you guys?
Internet? Spoiler alert over.
Hi. Oh god, this is amazing. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique and every week at BlackGirlNerds.com.
You can find me on Twitter at Sabina Has No R and weekly on Superhero News on YouTube.
Wonderful. Thank you, guys. Where can they find you?
You can find me at Twitter and Instagram at Markeia McCarty, MarkeiaMccarty. And I'm doing a horror campaign at Hyper RPG. That is Mondays at 6 p.m. PST, twitch.tv/HyperRPG. It's 3 episodes. The final of this tragic horror will be on March 20th. So please join us then.
And you can find me at CoyjanDreau on Twitter and Instagram and here every Tuesday. And you guys are great. We'll see you next week.
Woo!
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.